Hi, it's Ethan Hayter, and you're listening to Quick Link Podcast.
Hello, and welcome back to Quick Link Podcast. It's Monday, the 8th of November. This is show 312, and that's a Pepsi Max. We didn't get a show out on Friday, unfortunately. Between myself, Tom, Katie, and Nathan, everyone needed an extra day or two with their content. But here we are, ready to catch up on the news since Wednesday. As ever, we'll start the show by saying happy birthday, and celebrating today are Hagens Berman Axion new signing, Dries De Poeter, and Ethan Pawley of Tag Cycling back home in the motherland. While over the weekend, we hope that Thomas De Gendt, Talita De Jong, Fausto Masnada, Lizzie Banks, and Roxanne Fournier all had a lovely day. To the transfer news since our last show, where we had a deeper dive into Ineos' arrivals for 2022, and there's been a swarm of riders migrating for the new year. We'll start domestically as Ribble Worldsite, the country's best performing continental team, have announced seven new riders. Charlie Tanfield from Canyon DHB, who have recently confirmed themselves that they have secured funding for next year, thankfully. He will be joined by his older brother Harry, who escapes Quebec. Also pulling on the Ribble Blue next year will be Red Walters, Ollie Peckover, Stuart Balfour, Matt King and Finn Crockett. And I don't think they're done just yet. Education First have partnered with women's continental team TIBCO Silicon Valley Bank to form, you guessed it, EF Education TIBCO Silicon Valley Bank, and have ensured that all of their full-time riders will receive at least the minimum wage that would be paid to an equivalent rider on a men's World Tour team, which is just over €40,000 a year. The UCI-mandated women's equivalent for the top-tier riders is half of that. Trek Segafredo and Bike Exchange also have equality across both their men's and women's team. Announced as joining that team next year are Sarah Poydeven and Christabel Dobell-Hycock, both from Rally Cycling, five-time back-to-back Israeli road champion Omer Shapira from Canyon SRAM, Magdalene Valliers from the UCI women's team, Letizia Borghese from Arom Italia, and Lizzie Banks from Serra Tizit. Elsewhere, Lawson Craddock is moving from EF to Bike Exchange. Chad Hager departs after 8 years at DSM to return to Rally Cycling, for whom he raced in 2012 and 2013, when they were called Optum Kenny Benefit Strategies. And Cofidis have signed David Villela from Movistar and Max Walshard from Quebeca. Nina Kessler swaps TIBCO for Bike Exchange, and Lewis Vervaik moves from Alpecin to Quickstep. Thanks to a neat infographic posted this morning on Twitter by El Tio Del Dato, at ELTIODELDATO, El Tio Del Dato. Across the men's world tour, Astana lead the way with new signings for 2022, with 13 of their 28-man squad joining in January. Bora and Cofidis are next, both on 11, both having 29 men on their roster for next year so far. EF and Intermarché have signed 10 apiece. And at the other end of the list, Bike Exchange, who have signed just three riders for January: Lawson Craddock, Matteo Sobrero and Jesus Peña. Of course, there's plenty of time to come. The graphic also shows who's been at their current team the longest. Four of FDJ have been there for over 8 seasons, three for Ineos and Movistar, two at Astana, Bike Exchange and Jumbo-Visma, and one each at Bora, Intermarché, UAE, DSM, Lotto Soudal and AG2R. To the headlines then, and we'll tackle them in some kind of chronological order from our last show on Wednesday. That evening, after we'd published, Alex Dowsett made his attempt at the World Hour record in Mexico, where current holder Victor Campenaerts went furthest back in April 2019. Unfortunately, Dowsett, who has 1 year remaining on his deal with Israel Startup Nation, came up 535 metres short of setting a new record, and he also wasn't able to oust friend of the show Dan Bigham atop the British record table, 168 metres off his pace. Despite the disappointment, an emotional Dowsett was thrilled to have raised so much awareness for his charity Little Bleeders, which encourages youngsters who have haemophilia to engage with sport. Haemophilia is a genetic disorder which prevents the body from forming clots after injury to stem bleeding, either externally or internally, which could prove disastrous. Dowsett said in an interview right after his mammoth effort that he, quote, grew up being told that he couldn't do many things, so he set about proving that he could. You can support and find out more about his charity at littlebleeders.com. From Tractor Road and RCS have begun drip feeding their Giro d'Italia stage profiles for the 2022 edition, staggering them with an initial presentation covering La Grande Partenza as the race departs from Hungary next year. Then, for reasons only known to them, they are giving us the sprint stages, hilly stages, mountain stages and the final stage in separate reveals. They finally wrap it all up on Thursday, so we'll just take a full look at the route on Friday. Staying with the Giro, their Dubai exhibition crit thing saw Peter Sagan come home ahead of Egan Bernal, with Mark Hirschi next across the line after 30 laps of a 2K crit circuit. Time to look back at the last weekend, and hopefully you enjoyed our Tom at Rear du Peloton and his three-part preview for the CTT British Hill Climb Championships, which was held on a very wet Winnats Pass in Derbyshire on Halloween. Go back to shows 288, 295 and 302 for interviews with organiser Chris Myhill, Simon Warren of 100 Climbs and 2019 winner Ed Laverack. Here's our Tom with a review from the day, thankfully much less soggy than the last time I spoke to him. Here's Tom.
Over the Halloween weekend saw the close of the British domestic season with the National Hill Climbing Championships. I was roadside at the championship, which was one of the best attended of recent years. The weather was biblical, with steady rain throughout the event that cleared to warm sunshine within 20 minutes of the last rider up the hill. Myhill Cycling and Rutland CC put on a fantastic event, one which will be talked about for years. Winnats is considered the home of British hill climbing, and despite not holding the championship since 1977, it is still the most used hill in championship history. But it wasn't just the setting that made the day. The crowd, despite the weather, filled the roadside all the way up the climb. Presentations were watched by 200 plus riders and spectators at Race HQ. If you needed more evidence that Yorkshire is the home of British cycling, then this is it. Yes, I realise Winnats Pass is technically in Derbyshire, but both organisers are based in Sheffield, so as a resident of the aforementioned city and a member of Rutland CC, I'm claiming it for Yorkshire. There was a whole host of prizes to be won, with junior, senior and veteran titles up for grabs. And domestic hill climbing royalty was joined by domestic racing royalty, with Lizzie Banks, Dean Downing and the team from GCN on the hillside watching on the day. So, on to the results. In the women's event, Vifsha Jones of Pankhurst Cyclings defended her 2020 title, beating out last year's second place rider, Mary Wilkinson of Yorkshire Road Club, by just 1.2 seconds. Rebecca Richardson of Team Brother UK rounded out the podium in what was a repeat result from the Matlock Hill climb just a few weeks ago. Unfortunately, we didn't hear from any of the women's podium from the event as my schedule was too tight and I had to shoot off for family duties before the women's presentation. In the men's event, the two favourites coming into the race were defending champion Andrew Feather of HuntBikeWheels.com and last year's second place rider Tom Bell of High North Performance. But it was not to be a repeat of the result from last year, with Tom Bell taking the top step and in the process shaving almost 10 seconds off the 50 plus year old course record in a time of 3 minutes 1 second 0.6. Feather finished second, with local rider Andy Nichols of Team Lifting Gear Products Cycles in Motion finishing third. Here's what Tom had to say after the race.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you said it perfectly when it's a great climb to be able to do it on. Biblical weather as well, which I think made it slightly more epic. So yeah, very, very pleased.
Quicklink favourite Ed Laverack finished ninth on the day, a performance he was chuffed with when I chatted to him after the race. He was amazed by the crowd at the top of Winnats, with the noise being so deafening he was left with ringing in his ears after the finish. Ed and one of his fellow content creators, ComHunt TV, have put a fantastic documentary together about Ed's day at the Hill Climb Championship. It's available now on Ed's YouTube channel, and I thoroughly recommend sitting down with a brew and watching Ed's build up to the race. Simon Warren also put in a decent ride, finishing in 4 minutes 34, and commented on Twitter after that he could never enter again. However, as he mentioned to us, he steps up in age group next year. We wouldn't be surprised if we saw him in next year's event aiming for the podium. Chris Myhill was absolutely amazed at the turnout with the weather in consideration and led an excellent prize giving and interviews with the winners after the race. He was, however, one of the lucky ones and got to stay in the warm, dry HQ and watch the live feed of the race rather than have to brave the wind and rain on the pass. Finally, in the juniors events, we saw Thomas Patterson of Hells Owen ANCC take the junior men's events. Here's what he had to say after the race.
As I said, I did notice that you were second overall the Welsh Championship this year, and so I'm pretty sure the next year's national championship is in Wales next year. So, are you feeling highly motivated already for next year?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Okay, excellent. And I also see as well that you came second in the 41 mile TT, the Beacon TT as well. So, what are your favourites? Is it TTs or is it more hill climbs?
Oh, it's definitely hill climbing. Definitely.
All right. Listen, is there anybody I'd like to thank this afternoon?
Just my dad for taking me.
In the junior women, Sana Zaman of Bigfoot CC took the race as a relative unknown in the junior hill climbing scene, and you'll hear why in what she said after she had won.
So, how long have you been racing? So have you taken part in the National Climb before? I've not seen your name. And what one to do on Winnats Pass?
Yeah, it's a really nice climb actually. It's my second ever hill climb and I really enjoyed it.
And that's it for our run-up and coverage of this year's National Hill Climbing Championships. I've certainly found out a lot about this quirky part of the domestic season. Having never before been or seen a hill climb race, I will make several a part of next season's plans, both as a spectator and, training permitting, a competitor too. Thanks to all our guests who came and spoke to us on the show, and as always, thank you to you, Quicklinkers, for listening. You'll hear me next on our season review show.
Into the weekend just gone, and it was the European Cyclocross Championships being held in Drenthe at Col de Vam in the Netherlands. We were hoping to have juniors Ella McLean-Howell, Libby Bell and Elizabeth McKinnon on beforehand, but we just couldn't quite make it work. Hopefully we can catch up ahead of their next selection for Great Britain. One rider we did speak to ahead of the weekend at Trash Hill was Cameron Mason. He was chatting to our Katie at Right Bike Repeat in the days between Koppenberg Cross and Drenthe. So here they both are previewing a race that I'm about to tell you the results from. Here's Katie and Cameron.
First of all, congratulations on an amazing weekend.
Thank you. Yeah, it was.
How was it?
Yeah, it was good. I mean, after the weekend before, which was Rodeborde and Zonhoven, I was like, all right, this is interesting. And yeah, it was good to get started there. And then coming into Overijse, I knew the course would suit me better than Zonhoven. So I was like, oh, I was expecting, another top 20, another top 15. And then in the first lap on the first corner, I was basically dead last. Going up the start climb, a rider basically went from one side of the track to the other, and I just like almost went into the barrier. So I had to brake loads. So at that point, I was like, all right, you're just gonna have to ride like a recovery race basically and like see how good it can be. But the thing about Overijse and these muddy courses, it's like, the race doesn't really get away with you too much because you just have to ride your own race and your own pace. So for me, it wasn't hard passing other riders in the technical sections. And I just, rider after rider, just chipped away. And people started, like, once I got towards the top 10, people started shouting, like, go on, Cam, you're in 15th or 14th. And I was like, I don't think I'm right, because last lap I was in, like, 20th. So I haven't passed five guys. And then I would come around the finish and there's the, like, gantry screen where you can see where you are, and I was like, holy shit, they're actually right, so I'll just keep on pushing. And then I basically did that for an hour and then came in ninth, so it worked out well.
It did, yeah, no kidding. You did seem to suddenly leap up a few places. You must have, like,
yeah, I think at one point I caught like a group of five and just kind of rolled through, and then no one got on my wheel, so then it was just like, yeah, because as I was saying in that race, like, there were some groups about, but everyone was literally just like hacking away themselves. And if you caught a rider, they weren't really sitting on me because of how, like, the course is really technical and then it's really steep. So there's no real benefit to being right on the wheel. So yeah, it was actually quite a good race to ride my own race and come from the back. There was, if I'd had those circumstances at a different race, it would have been totally different.
Yeah, so I guess it's probably really good in a way, because it gave you a really strong sense of where you're at in terms of your form, as you say, because you were riding your own race and not having to worry, or not, you know, having to sort of be behind people and stuff. You must feel like you seem in really good shape at the minute. What's happening? Have you changed something, or have you just peaked at the right time?
We don't really know. Like, going into this block, for me, this block includes Euros this weekend, and then going on next, this was just like to find my feet again, having not raced cross properly since January. So yeah, our goals were to find where we are again, get back doing all the things that we do normally, but 2 weeks in and I'm already getting podiums, so it's like very unexpected. But then you look with like a bit of hindsight, and you realize like everything was always there. Like, even last year, like, I've shown that it's possible. It's just that, like with everyone and with every rider, like, sometimes it's your time, sometimes it's not your time. And I think at the moment it's just my time. So I just want to kind of, like, I had a good catch up with my coach on Tuesday after Koppenberg. We were just like, we don't need to change anything because it's worked so far. So now we just keep going, look after the body, look after the head, and on to the next.
Yeah, amazing. Well, it's whatever you're doing is obviously working. It's very philosophical for someone so young to sort of say it's just, you know, it's just working. It's just good. So tell me a little bit about Koppenberg then, because that was a different kettle of fish, but you absolutely stormed that as well. We didn't see any of it. I was like, ah, I want to see.
Yeah. And I'm trying to find, I think for the U23 race, they like test the cameras. They just like film bits and bobs, and then they put, there's like a minute highlights out there somewhere. I don't think there's a full foot like race footage, but yeah, like racing for the win was very different, obviously, like especially different from the day before. And it's the first opportunity that U23s have had since, like, there were only two U23 races last season, Euros and Worlds. So whereas normally this X2O series is, yeah, all separate U23. Mm-hmm. So there was a bit of like, what are these U23 riders going to be like racing for the win and stuff? And I kind of knew roughly where I'd be at. I think I realized pretty clear, like, it was just me and Pim just going to be racing for the win. Like, the Koppenberg is just like a total like blank slate. Like, it just shows exactly where you're at. There's no hiding at all. It's like every time up the climb, you're just doing a maximum effort just to keep riding, and some ride it faster, some ride it slower, and that's it. And I chatted with my mechanic, who's an ex pro racer in Belgium, and he was just saying, yeah, like, today you don't need to care about where anyone else is. You just ride your own pace. Don't go into the red. Don't make mistakes. And I made like a couple of mistakes, but overall, that's basically what both me and Pim did all the way to the end. Like, he would make a mistake and I would surge up to his wheel and pass him. And then he would pass me and where he's stronger. And it was just like that whole race. And then on the last lap, that gap came from like 15 seconds all the way down to just a handful of seconds in the finish. So I definitely feel like, yeah, I was just very close. But Pim, Ron R knows that too, that it was like we were just dead evenly matched on a course like that. So yeah, it's promising that on, as I was saying, like on a course where there's nowhere to hide, that's where things were.
Yeah, definitely. How does that translate then to a course where maybe there isn't as much technical and it's just a slog, where you will be maybe more close with other riders?
I'd say like courses that are technical but really fast, and where drafting is more important, that's when there's just more like uncontrollables, other riders, and missing out on a gap maybe. And especially like, yeah, when you've got a big group and say someone's got a teammate, that does actually affect it in these fast races. Whereas, yeah, in a mud race, there's nothing anyone else can do. So I find them a little bit like, I'm not really from the road background at all, so I find them a lot harder to manage. I prefer like the more mountain bikey off-road stuff, where it's just you and you just do your thing and what you get is what you get. I'm learning to kind of embrace and love the kind of romantic uncontrollable side of road racing, because yeah, it's when it works really well. So
yeah, and it's sort of part of, I guess, your development as a rider to kind of bring those skills through. Obviously with Euros coming up at the weekend, what's the course like there, and what do you expect, what kind of racing do you expect?
Yeah, so they've never had a cyclocross race at the Col de Vam before, but from what I've seen from they had Dutch nationals there a few years ago when Van der Poel won. It's basically a hill, artificial hill, like, I don't know, 50, 60 meters high. So I think it will be similar to the last two races. It's definitely going to be muddy because it's just been raining nonstop in Belgium and the Netherlands. So I think it will suit me in that respect. But there's all the best U23 riders are there. And a few of them weren't at Koppenberg. So I think that will be an aspect too, like Ryan Camp and Niels van der Put. So I'm nervous because I know what's possible, but I think that I didn't know what was possible before Koppenberg, and I still did a really good result. So like, regardless of what I've done already, it's not going to add or take away to what's actually going to be possible on Saturday.
Yeah, for sure. The under 23s, obviously, as you say, like you weren't all there at the weekend. So there'll be a few more of you, but it's still, you know, it's not like being in an elite field where you've got loads and loads of guys. You've got a bit more room potentially. But yeah. Does that come with a bit more pressure, because obviously you are, especially where you are, where you are right now, you're feeling a little bit more like you can do this, you can maybe you know, challenge for the win. How does it differ in terms of your mindset on the day?
Yeah, the U23 race is like, we have to make our own race. Like when we're in an elite race, there's a Van der Poel, there's a Van Aert or a Pidcock, who's, you're always just gonna have to chase him down and you kind of follow after that. Whereas racing for the win and racing your own, creating the race yourself is different, and something that even through most of my career I've never really had to do. I've been somewhat of an underdog in all the different categories. So whereas I think guys like Pim Ronha, they've raced for the win in juniors and then and all of this. So is, I think that maybe this season will be a learning point for me, is how to, the difference between doing a really cool ride and like, oh, everyone's so happy for you, but actually like getting down and like doing the business when it matters, because I see that as quite a big difference. And you can't really do that in the elite races because the level is really high. But for me in the U23, like that's what the category is for, is for riders who are younger and are making that step up. And hopefully the skills I learn now will help in like 3-4 years when hopefully I can do it in the elites.
Yeah, for sure. So do you feel, like you said, you're a bit nervous, but are you thriving on the kind of pressure of that expectation? Because you said you normally feel like a bit of an underdog.
I'm probably not thriving on it, but I have ways to deal with those things. So I'm not like, I know that at the end of the day, I'll do my thing on Saturday. So I just have to manage all the other things on the way there. And then once you get to start line, it's easy. It's like all the other things is the heart, like keeping up with your training and keeping up with your sleep and your diet and your travel and all these things that are just like right now, they're just in the way from me doing what I want to do, which is the race on Saturday. So, I don't really think about like the pressure of the outside people. Like I had obviously quite a lot more attention after second at Koppenberg and interviews and stuff like this, but it's, I don't think it changes much for me.
It's good for time. Is it fair to say that the Euros in cross is basically the world's, isn't it? I mean, am I doing the Americans a disservice, I guess, a little bit?
No, it depends on the generation. It depends on the category. Like for the women's, it basically is, but without Clara Hunsinger. For the men's, there aren't really any threats from America at the moment. For the U23, you never know about the juniors coming up, so I'm not sure at the moment. But I think in the junior women's, there's some strong, I can't remember her name, but one of the Trek riders is probably medal potential, but there's definitely no South American cyclocross riders at the moment.
Very Eurocentric, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. And that's why I like about the mountain bike side of things, is that we go to basically there's a Brazilian World Cup next year, which is just awesome. And there's been South African World Cups, all this. So mountain bike is truly worldwide. And
definitely amazing locations.
And like great riders from all countries, like New Zealand, Australia, all of Europe. Mm-hmm. There's a good rider from every country, which is cool, which you definitely don't get in cyclocross.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it is good for that. So what discipline of mountain biking are you most drawn towards, the Olympic distance or downhill?
Not really. I'm not big and strong enough for downhill. I think I will just break my...
Looks terrible.
Yeah, I think I'll just... I would just break myself. But cross-country and cross-country marathon as well is a pretty cool discipline. Like basically a flat-out cross-country race, but you do it for like 3 or 4 hours. So it's savage. Like I haven't done a proper cross-country mountain bike race yet, but I'm quite keen to do like a marathon stage race next year, because something like Cape Epic. I don't think I'll do Cape Epic next year, but Cape Epic is like a bucket list thing for my career, definitely.
Oh yeah, I was gonna say actually, a question that is always worth asking, like what if you were to look back on your career in like 15-20 years or whatever, what would you like to have achieved? What's your kind of dream goals?
I think to at least do world championships in every discipline would be cool. And I think I'm heading in that direction. Cape Epic's definitely up there to do. But I don't know, like, yeah, I'm not very good at doing like 5-10 year plans. I'm a very kind of, I'll just do this and then don't think about it. But more like fun things, like I'd like to race an EWS, an Enduro World Series race, which is, yeah, something I've not done before, but it'd be really cool. So it's like really quite technical downhilling, but it's over a full day and it's time stages. And the EWS scene is massive, like, yeah, totally worldwide, like the mountain bike. So to do one of them would be cool.
That sounds cool. So you didn't come through the track route then, or did you do any track riding when you were?
No, I think I did a few like track British Cycling sessions when I was on a go ride club, but I never really got the appeal of driving to a car park, going into a leisure center and riding around some wood. Like in my head, like, yeah, if you're really good at it and you were really competitive, oh, it would be awesome. But I actually wasn't really that competitive growing up, because I probably, to look after my own head, I couldn't be, because I wasn't very good. So if I was really competitive, I would just be like really sad and down all the time because I wasn't winning like races. So
yeah.
I think they kind of like nature nurture, they go together. You know, the competitive ones probably, yeah, they were able to be competitive.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah, makes sense. You've got to have the kind of the mental, I guess, chops to go with that, like drive to compete.
And some people like are so competitive at all levels, which is amazing. And I think obviously everyone has that, all races have that competitiveness, but yeah, but to be a real like winner, you do need to be quite competitive. Yeah.
It's probably really tiring to be that, to live on that.
Yeah. Yeah. I know I've had teammates in the past that never seemed to really like, they just like, no matter what the result, it would never be good enough.
Mm.
And I just think like, oh, I found them quite hard to be around because like they just could never accept what was just there. And I don't know how long term you could do that, like just week in, week out, just going, oh, this didn't work. Oh, this was rubbish. Oh, I should have done this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, just tiring. And like you say.
Yeah, for sure. And then when you come out of all that, like it must feel like you've lost your purpose, I guess. And that's not, you know, you got to have fun, right? That's
yeah.
Riding a bike has to be fun. That's got to be the number one goal. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, that was really great. Thanks for your time.
Cool. Thank you very much.
No worries. Take care.
Cool. See you then.
Thank you. Cheers, Cameron. Bye.
To the big day itself then, and on the Saturday, the junior women got the racing underway on Saturday morning with Zoe Backstead dominant over 45 minutes of racing, ending the first lap with a solo lead of almost 20 seconds, which she extended out to over a minute, adding a European jersey to her rainbow one from Flanders back in September. Silver for Leonie Bentveld of the Netherlands, with her countrywoman Nienke Vinke taking bronze, 9th for McLean Howell, 10th for Bell. Next on course were the under 23 men featuring Cameron Mason, and despite giving it a massive dig to get back on after an early crash, our Cameroonie burned up too many matches and he wasn't able to contest a 3-up sprint to the line, won by defending champion Ryan Kamp ahead of Belgian duo Niels van der Putter and Thibaut Nice. 6th in the end for Cameron, sandwiched between four Belgians. World champion Pim Ronha was 10th, Joe Blackmore was a great 12th, Toby Barnes in 17th. Rounding out Saturday's action was the elite women's race, and world champion Lucinda Brand grabbed her third win of the season, almost a minute ahead of Blanka Katjavas of Hungary. Then three more Dutch riders, with Yara Kastelein taking bronze, then world champion Ceylan del Carmen Alvarado in 4th, with convicted doper Denise Betsema in 5th. No Brits in the race, unfortunately. To Sunday, and the boys were up first. Aaron Dox took Belgium's first gold of the weekend with his 5th win of the season. Behind him, a two-way sprint for silver, which was won by David Haverdings of the Netherlands from Luca Paletti of Italy. Ollie Akers taking 6th for GB with Max Grensil and Nathan Smith 11th and 12th respectively. Dox versus Haverdings is going to be the cyclocross battle to watch over the next 5 years or so. Penultimate race was the under 23 women, and there was a Dutch podium lockout as 2020 junior world champion Shirin van Anrooy grabbed her second win of the season with Puck Peters a close second. Then over a minute down on the winner, Fem van Empel grabbed bronze. Finally, on Sunday afternoon, the elite men's race also saw a home winner for the Netherlands as Lars van der Haar upset the Belgian applecart with his first win in 2 years as Belgians took places 2nd to 6th behind him. Quinten Ermans was silver, Michael van Turenhout taking bronze, then Tunet, Laurens Sweek and Jens Adams in that order. Unfortunately, Great Britain's only representative in the race, Thomas Meen, was DNF. Over in the States, Ruby West and Curtis White won both of their elite races at the Northampton International 2-Day in Massachusetts. Next on the cyclocross calendar is round 3 of Super Prestige with Jarmacht Cross in Niel on Thursday. Then there's Etjes Cross Leuven on Saturday, and the World Cup heads to Tabor in the Czech Republic on Sunday for round 6. From mud to timber and back to the track, the UCI Track Champions League began in Mallorca, the first of 5 rounds, which also visits Lithuania, London and Tel Aviv over the next 6 weeks. There's 2 events per round for the sprinters, that's the sprint and the Keirin, with the Devil and Scratch for the endurance riders, all being played out over 14 races in about 3 hours each round. In the Women's Endurance League, Maggie Coles-Leister won the Scratch, with Katie Archibald going long on the final 500 metres to seal the elimination race ahead of Kirsten Wild. In the Sprint League, world champion Emma Heinzer beat Leah Friedrich in the sprint, whilst Kelsey Mitchell took the Keirin ahead of Heinz. In men's action, world and Olympic sprint champion Harry Lavrason won that from Mikhail Yakolev, before finishing second to Stefan Bottiger in the Keirin. In the endurance races, Corbin Strong won both the Devil and the 20k Scratch. There's a point system for the riders, with 20 points for a win, 17 for second, 15 for third, 13 for fourth, and then it goes down from 11 to 1 point for fifth to 15th place in all events. Leading the standings after one round, Katie Archibald and Corbin Strong in the endurance leagues, and the sprint league leaders are Emma Heinzer and Harry Lavrason. Clear as mud, right? Next up is a trip to the Chido Arena in Panevėžys in Lithuania on Saturday the 27th of November. Lastly, the 12 nominations for this year's Velo d'Or have been announced by Velo magazine, an award that goes back to 1992, where Miguel Indurain won the inaugural one and then won it again in 93. It traditionally goes to the rider considered to have performed the best over the calendar year. On this year's shortlist then, in alphabetical order, back-to-back world champion and 2019 award winner Julian Alaphilippe, Tour of Flanders and E3 winner Casper Asgreen, Giro winner and runner-up in 2019 Egan Bernal, that's runner-up in the award, not the Giro, the Olympic champion Richard Carapaz, the joint tour stage record holder and Meyerbeek winner Mark Cavendish, Olympic champion and Paris-Roubaix winner Sonny Colbrelli, the world, European and Olympic sprint champion Harry Lavrason, back-to-back Tour de France winner and 2020 award runner-up Tadej Pogacar, Olympic time trial champion, back-to-back Vuelta winner and 2020 award recipient Primoz Roglic, Amstel Gold Race, Belgian champion and Tour of Britain winner Wout van Aert, world cyclocross champion and winner of Strade Bianche, Mathieu van der Poel, and Tour of Flanders winner and double Olympic medalist Annemiek van Vleuten. The award is usually handed out in early December. Just to confirm, that's Alaphilippe, Asgreen, Bernal, Carapaz, Cavendish, Colbrelli, Lavrason, Pogacar, Roglic, van Aert, van der Poel, and van Vleuten. Oh, one final thing before we go, as I know everyone's on tenterhooks. George Abreu won the Tour of Venezuela, and Daniel Bichelmann the Tour of Burkina Faso. There, that'll do. We'll be back on Wednesday with a chit-chat about cycling and whatever. Hopefully another team goes mad and announces like 10 signings or something. We'll see you then. Until then, ride safe, and as ever, take care. You've been listening to Quicklink Podcast, your daily microdose of pro cycling news and results. You can find us across social media at Quicklink Pod, or you can contact us by emailing show@quicklinksports.com. You can support this show by using the code QUICKLINK when you shop with veloskin.cc for all your chamois cream and skincare needs, and also at efswheels.com, where UK customers can get themselves a full set of tubeless ready full carbon wheels for under £500. Share the show, and we'll be back with you tomorrow. Bye now.